Radical References Number 3, Mabon 2022. Aldous Huxley's Ultimate Revolution, recorded in 1962. In 1962, Aldous Huxley, author of Brave New World, gave a speech to mark 30 years since its publication. 60 years after that speech, Huxley's prognostications of the populace learning to love their servitude continue to evolve. Generally, I don't do fiction. I find that non-fiction provides far more than enough to deal with, without worrying about storytelling and escapism. It was rather a shock, then, to find that both the 90th anniversary of Brave New World and the 60th anniversary of Huxley's speech about it passed without seemingly any major comment. In this blog, I summarised the main points of his speech, reducing the 40-minute, 4,000 words down to around 900 words and 5 minutes. Note that I've also edited Huxley's rather ponderous Victorian speech mannerism to remove the long pauses within sentences, making it flow more freely. If this whets your appetite for more, then you can find the original recording online. Huxley's general argument is that what he foresaw in the 1930s was, in the white heat of the technological revolution of the late 1950s and 1960s, beginning to come true. Fast forward to today, and even the seemingly more outrageous aspects of the speech relating to electrodes in the brain is now part of an Elon Musk-funded research project. More importantly, at the core of Huxley's viewpoint is an analysis which can be characterised as neo-Luddite, because it puts the emphasis on the effect of new technology upon human commonality. If you want to understand the contemporary crisis in politics, the mass media, and recent panics over ideas like the Great Reset, then the work of Huxley, Brave New World, and his non-fiction follow-up, Brave New World Revisited, offer a far more clear and concise view of what is happening today than much of the contemporary comment on these issues. What's especially nice about creating this review is that I don't have to read the words of the original author. We have his actual words, which of course convey far more of what he meant in writing them than their literal meaning. I urge you to listen to the entire speech, and to read both books if possible. But for now, here are the edited highlights of Huxley's arguments about the slowly developing Brave New World of modern technology.
Well, now, in regard to this problem of the ultimate revolution, in the past, we can say that all revolutions have essentially aimed at changing the environment in order to change the individual. I mean, there's been the political revolution, the economic revolution, the religious revolution. All these aimed, as I say, not directly at the human being, but at his surroundings. Today, we are faced, I think, with the approach of what may be called the ultimate revolution, the final revolution, where a man can act directly on the mind-body of his fellows. This has generally been of a violent nature, but that if you are going to control any population for any length of time, you must have some measure of consent. Well, it seems to me that the nature of the ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this, that we are in process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. This is, it seems to me, the ultimate in malevolent revolution, shall we say. And this is a problem which has interested me for many years, and about which I wrote Brave New World. Since then, I have continued to be extremely interested in this problem, and I have noticed with increasing dismay that a number of the predictions which were purely fantastic when I made them 30 years ago have come true or seem in process of coming true. That if you can get people to consent to the state of affairs in which they are living, the state of servitude, the state of being, having their differences ironed out and being made amenable to mass production methods on the social level, if you can do this, then you have you are likely to have a much more stable and much more lasting society, a much more easily controllable society than you would if you were relying wholly on clubs and firing squads and concentration camps. But I think that insofar as dictators become more and more scientific, more and more concerned with a technically perfectly running society, they will be more and more interested in the kind of techniques which I imagined and described from existing realities in Brave New World. Well, this, as I say, is in this field of pure persuasion. I think we do know much more than we did in the past, and obviously we now have mechanisms for multiplying the demagogue's voice and image in a quite hallucinatory way. I mean, the television and the radio, this alone, of course, creates an enormous gulf between the modern and the ancient demagogue. And the ancient demagogue could only appeal to as many people as his voice could reach by the yelling at his utmost, but the modern demagogue can touch literally millions at a time. And of course, with his, the multiplication of his image, he can produce this kind of hallucinatory effect, which is of enormous hypnotic and suggestive importance. I think this is peculiarly important because, as one sees in looking back over history, we have allowed in the past all those advances in technology which have profoundly changed a social and individual life, we've allowed them to take us by surprise. I mean, it seems to me that during the late 18th century and early 19th century, when the new machines were making possible the factory system, it was not beyond the wit of man to see what was happening and to project into the future, and maybe to forestall the really dreadful consequences which have plagued England and most of Western Europe and most of this country for about 50 or 60 years, the horrible abuses of the factory system. I mean, if a certain amount of forethought had been devoted to the problem at that time, if people had first of all found out what was happening and then used their imagination to see what might happen, and then had gone on to work out means by which the worst applications of the new techniques should not take place, and then I think Western humanity might have been spared about three generations of utter misery which was imposed upon the poor at that time. And similarly with various technological advances now. I mean, it's quite clear we have to start thinking very, very hard about the problems of automation. And again, I think we have to think still more profoundly about the problems which may arise in relation to these new techniques, which may contribute to this ultimate revolution. Our business is to be aware of what is happening, then to use our imaginations to see what might happen, how this might be abused, and then, if possible, to see that the enormous powers which we now possess, thanks to the scientific and technological advances, shall be used for the benefit of human beings and not for their ultimate degradation.
The Metablog is Ramblin' Activist Paul Mobb's work-related occasional blog. It examines the troublesome and often difficult meanings behind today's news and events, rather than simply repeating the conventional wisdom of the mass or social media. You can find the blog online at www.fraw.org.uk/blog. To keep up with new information, you can follow him on social media and YouTube, and please subscribe if possible, as in today's digital analytics popularity contest, it's the only way to get a wider audience. The Metablog is released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License, where other materials, not produced by Paul Mobbs, are included in the series. These will have been issued under compatible open licenses.